Today, you are going to get a front row seat to the memorable Springbok career of 1995 Rugby World Cup champion Rudolf Strauli. Rudolf, welcome to Front Row Rugby.
Thank you for having me. What a privilege, Peter.
It's lovely to have you here too. Rudolf, I'd like to begin in 1994. It's your Springbok Test debut. It's against the All Blacks. It's in Dunedin. Talk to us about that occasion.
Yeah, obviously, my first Test, what a memorable day and privilege to play for the Springboks. We were in Dunedin, House of Pain, the old Carisbrook Stadium, not the new stadium. I didn't sleep that whole night. I was walking through Dunedin early mornings. There was snow on the peaks. And like you always do on your first Test, you fear that you were going to make a mistake. And that is also the only game for the Springboks and the only Test that I lost for the Springboks. We were three number eights on the loose forwards. Frans Chopina got concussed in the Wellington game, and I got my opening Test at number seven with Adrian Richter and Tian Strauss. We were the loose forward combination. I was very privileged to score a try off Andre Joubert. He actually made all the running. I just popped over. And yeah, we did lost closely. It wasn't a big loss against All Blacks, but my only loss in the Springbok jersey as a player.
Rudolf, there are people who say that it's not ideal to make your debut against the All Blacks and that maybe it would be better to play your first match for the Springboks against, let's say, somebody like Italy or Scotland, with all due respect. What's your opinion on that?
No, for me, I just was so privileged to get capped. I didn't mind, and it could have worked differently. I could have won my first one and lost my last game against All Blacks. Then it wouldn't have been ideal. So it worked out well. So my last game against the All Blacks, we also not a big score, 15-12, like you know, but I'm saying that's the games between the old rivalry. They respect each other and those scores are always close.
Indeed they are. So, Rudolf, I've had many former Springboks on this show that were also on that tour in 1994 to New Zealand, and every one of them have told me that it was the toughest tour that they ever went on. Would you agree with that?
Well, we still had midweek games as well, Peter. We toured 7 weeks, Wednesday, Saturday, and because I was a utility loose forward, I was on almost every game. I was all on the bench while I played, but At that age, I was 30. I just wanted to play as many games I could get in under my belt. So I didn't mind having a tough tour. But a very talented group of players. A good coach, Ian McIntosh. I think he got unfairly dealt with. Sorry about that. But unfairly dealt with maybe towards the end. Worked out well for me the following year, which Kirsty then became the coach. And he obviously believed in me. And that's where I got most of my games.
You mentioned Ian McIntosh. He was out after that tour to New Zealand. What can you tell us about Mac as a coach, the way that you experienced him?
Look, I mean, Mac always hard on his sleeve. I mean, what you saw is what you got, you know. And I mean, really, very successful coach in his own respect in South Africa. He did well with the Sharks. I thought those early years were difficult because it was a difficult tour to go on as a coach. It wasn't an easy tour. And in those days, you still had selectors as well, which they selected him a team that I don't think Mac really would have selected himself. But, I mean, still a good side of good experienced players. But we were just new in touring. You know, we only got back out of isolation in 92. So I thought those coaches in that era was really under pressure.
No, for sure. And then, like you mentioned, Kitch Christie then came in and the first assignment was a two-test home series against Argentina. I'm curious, Rudolf, how much different was the atmosphere in the Springbok camp with Kitch coming in?
Look, Kitch was obviously one of our most successful coaches. I don't think he lost a test match as a coach. But he was there for a very short time. But, I mean, he knew South African rugby well. And obviously he was struggling with health issues himself, you know. So Kitch wasn't there for a long time. But he surrounded himself with the people that he knew that he could trust. And most of those players were fortunate to have been in that Lions team or Lions squad, the 93 to 96 team, I think, which we, in 93, we won all the cups, all the domestic cups and the Super 10. So Kitch was blessed again with a very good side. And then he brought in some talented players from the other provinces, like Joel and Anna Joubert. And there's a lot of good players that he had a selection. There was quite a, and nobody really knew us. We were unknown players in world rugby. So I think Kitch moved through the ranks in that first three or four test matches without anyone knowing him or knowing the players that they were playing against.
And then after that Argentina series, we went to the UK, played tests against Scotland and Wales. As it turns out, and I know that you referenced it when you spoke about that All Blacks test in Dunedin scoring your first try, you also scored tries against the Scots and the Welsh, and it actually took your personal tally to 4 tries in 5 tests. Let's be honest, that's the kind of strike rate that a wing would be proud of, right? So I have to ask you, what was the secret?
No, just privilege, unbelievable side. And you know, I played with two very good scrum halves. One was my brother-in-law, Johan Roo, but Joost van der Westhuizen was like an extra loose forward. It was great to play with Joost. I mean, he was one of those guys that could create. Like Andre Joubert, I just followed those guys that were creators, and then I would finish off. You know, I wasn't really doing all the hard work.
In the right place at the right time, eh? Okay, so Rudolf, let's go into 1995. Before the World Cup, we played a warm-up test against Western Samoa and we gave them a big hiding at Ellis Park. How confident were you at that stage that we could actually win the World Cup?
Well, again, we didn't really know what the World Cup was going, what it was all about. I think we only realized we had our warm-up games and we studied most of our opponents. We knew we had the opening game against Australia, but we had a lot of video footage. I was fortunate to play against Michael Leinach and Campisi and Zinzan Brook. We were playing in Italy in those days. We were playing our trade in Italy and in South Africa. And we most of the footage on Australia was from videotapes we got via Italy. You know, as you talk about the technical analysts, nowadays you've got everything on drones and specialized sessions that you can actually study your opponents. But we didn't have a lot of, and they didn't have a lot on us. I don't think they knew a lot of, you know, I mean, Kitch shuffled the team around a little bit. We had that warm-up game against Samara. And then we were in camp in Saldanha, where we met Nelson Mandela. But I think the biggest thing is we didn't have a lot of warm-up games. But that first game against Australia, I think, made us realize that we have got a chance and that we were sort of a secret unknown with the South African public behind us. We were hard to beat because we were good in defense and we had certain good individual players that nobody really knew how good they were.
We'll talk more about that Australia match in a moment, but I just want to come back to what you were talking about, the camps, Saldanha, that sort of thing. I'll reference the Wanderers Golf Club as well. I've heard about those fitness sessions that you guys had, and Joel Stransky, for example, told me that they were torture. What would you say?
Yeah, no, I was heavy at that stage. I think my first Curry Cup game, I came in at 120 kgs. I think they talk about 18 stone on the hoof. But in the World Cup, I was 107, so I lost a bit of weight in that session that Kitch put us through.
Okay, let's talk about that opening match now against the Wallabies. A great occasion at Newlands. We won the match 27-18. How do you remember that day?
It was a memorable week for me, as my firstborn was born just the next following day, 11 o'clock. So Kitch didn't even know that Morne organized me on the flight. So I just ran off the pitch. Then went straight to the berth and back to the team. And with a lot of adrenaline, I think when I got back to the team, that was a midweek game, wasn't on a weekend. I think I got back to the team on a Friday. I was still full of adrenaline. But I think when we came out and we saw the South African crowd, that made us realize the importance of the World Cup. You know, a lot of people talk about us uniting the country. But I think the country united us as a team. You know, I think of it the other way around. We were all individuals coming from strong provinces, but you know, the Springbok team is not always such a united team because you've got a lot of strong individuals. But I think that first game united us as a team immediately.
And Rudolf, I'd like to ask you a little bit about Kitch's strategy. I've heard that he had spoken about a green team and a gold team, and the idea that one team would play against Australia and then another one against Romania. We saw, like, for example, Adrian Richter came in and captained the side against the Romanians. I've also heard about Kitch talking about the high road and the low road. What can you tell us about that?
He did believe in the high road, and he had different teams. I think it was before his time. It's almost what Rossi is doing at the moment. I mean, you're selecting certain players for certain teams, and there was a bit of rotation, squad rotation. But towards the end, when he got to semi-finals or finals, I think he picked his strongest side that he thought was what he wanted to do. So. Well, the law was also a bit different when you went forward with the ball from number eight and you went to ground, you got the scrum. So you could pick a strong scrummaging side and you could kick the ball dead. Then you had a 22 drop down. So we practiced a lot of kickoff receives and 22 receiving kickoffs. And it was a very much a left-footed kicker with Juba on his left foot and right-footed fly off, so putting them down in their territory and a very much of a defensive game plan we have.
Indeed. So, Rudolf, you referenced the semi-final there. I'm going to come to that in a second because before that was the quarter-final against Western Samoa in Johannesburg. You played in that match. You were back in the side. But then Kitch decided to play Mark Andrews at eighth man instead for that semi-final against France. How disappointed were you?
I wasn't really disappointed. I knew exactly what was happening. In the quarterfinals against Samoa, we had quite a physical game. I had a bit of concussion. I made a mistake to go down, but I played the whole game. I went down, and I think afterwards, Dr. Frans van Staes told Kitch that I was dazed or semi-concussed, and then they had some testing done, and I was then put on the bench. But I mean, going on the bench against the French, I knew if they would run, I wasn't going to make the starting lineup. So Kitch was very open with me about that. I think he wanted to load the pack a bit, and he was looking at lineups, wanted to pick three locks there. And I knew if I was going to throw my toys, I wasn't going to sit on the bench, and I wasn't going to go on in the final, which I was fortunate to do, to be there with the final whistle.
Indeed, the case. So I want to talk about that because, as you say, you did actually come onto the field in the final. We won that match, obviously, as everybody knows. Talk to me about what it feels like when the referee blows the final whistle and you are a Rugby World Champion.
I think it was just relief. There was a lot of pressure on us, and there was obviously a lot of jubilation. But I mean, with my firstborn, and a lot of things happened in that period with us, so there was a lot of emotion, and I think we were just drained with emotion. And I only realized a little bit later what was after effects of winning that. But at that time, it was just emotion of relief going through your body. And obviously, I slept early that night. I didn't even party through the night. I was just tired. I was just moved.
I can imagine. So, Rudolf, after that, we played Wales at Ellis Park. Many people deem that to be the very first ever professional rugby match. We know that rugby obviously turned professional after that Rugby World Cup. Let me ask you, while that was going on, there was this issue of the sport switching from amateur to professional, and Francois Pienaar was talking to you guys about contracts and all that sort of stuff. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, look, I mean, I still have all the contracts with me. So, I mean, that got me into where I'm at the moment. I think the Players Union started then, and I was doing my articles at a law firm, Douglas Dyer, Dyson's attorneys in Pretoria. And I was still then part-time working and playing. And I had to make a decision at that stage. We obviously got offered. With that Rebel, with Ross Turnbull and those guys that offered us a Rebel contracts to break away. And yeah, it was interesting times because we had to focus on things that we now sorted out under my players and Soraya, which we've sorted out now, taking time. At that stage, we were forced into professional era, not having enough time signing contracts with actually a lot of other players that weren't in that Springbok squad got left behind all of it. So there was a lot of ill feelings, and we could have done it a bit better. You know, I think we needed a bit of a year to actually go in that transition. We went into that transition too quickly.
Fair
But first,
enough.
we played after World Cup, we played in Italy and England. England was my last test that I played again. That was at Twickenham.
That's right, and that's actually where I want to go next, Rudolph. At Twickenham against England, you remember in the lead up to that test match, my cat made some derogatory comments about Francois Pienaar, and I've been told, Toks van der Linde, for example, told me that that really fired you guys up. So how satisfying was it to beat the English that day?
It was great. There was also, for me, if I think back, I came on for Ruben Kruger, and you know, got a great friend of mine and miss him dearly. There's a lot of, like I say, characters that have passed away that didn't get enough accolades. He was one of those guys that didn't get enough accolades. But yeah, we were fired up. We went for a run in the park. We were just there in Hyde Park. I think we went almost like one of those grilling sessions that we had at the Wanderers. We went for one of those runs in the park, even on the, I think, the Thursday before the test. So we were really fired up for that game. But it was satisfying beating the English team.
It's always nice to beat them. But let me also ask you, Rudolph, as you mentioned, that was your last test match for the Springboks. How disappointed were you that it ended there?
Well, I didn't know that it was going to end then. You know, I mean, obviously, Kitch believed in me, and you know, there was then sort of a change of the guard in coaching structures. We had signed those World Cup contracts, or we signed 3-year deals, and we went to play in Europe. Myself, Francois, and Joel. I think late. They said we got offers. I think they actually sold us at the end of the day. We didn't get offered. But I went to Bedford. Francois went to Saracens. Joel went to Leicester Tigers. But that was a whole total new chapter in my rugby playing career. And it was a pity when he was sort of out of sight, out of mind. I thought I could have played one or two more test matches for South Africa, but then game. Andre Markgraaf era, where Francois was also not, and Gerrie Tichman came in as captain.
Let me ask you also, Rudolph, you know, as you mentioned, you played 10 test matches for the Springboks. And I think that a lot of kids growing up, they dream of playing for the Springboks. And then I think that they think that they'll end up playing 100 test matches like Eben Etzebeth and Victor Matfield. But maybe it might only be 10, as was the case with you. What would your advice be to those kids?
I always say to them, how patient can you be? How long can you wait? I only became a Springbok at the age of 30. But there again, I mean, in 81, I made the SA school side, and we never toured, and we only started touring in 92 again, you know. So we were in isolation for 10 years. I was fortunate to play a bit of rugby in Italy and Wales over that period. So the only way I could see the rest of the world was by traveling outside of South Africa, and that was difficult. But again, I was blessed to have got the opportunity. We were still touring then, so I played 10 test matches and 23 matches. You know, we had midweek games. So every game for the Springboks was special, not only the test matches. I captained one or two Wednesday games as well, one against Taranaki, one against Cardiff in the 94 tour. So yeah, I think, if I think back of it, I would have loved to have played longer. You know, I was already 32 off the World Cup. I played till I was 36 and got an Achilles tendon injury, and then went into coaching. So I was fortunate. I say to most kids, is how long can you wait to become a Springbok? I think most of them think it just happens quickly.
And it certainly doesn't work that way for most people. So earlier I asked you about Ian McIntosh as a coach. Let me ask you about Kitch Christie as a coach, the way that you experienced him.
Yeah, Kitch was a mentor for me. I mean, obviously, I met up with him at Northern Transvaal in Pretoria when we were in the old Northern Transvaal, the Bulls rugby. He was at Harlequins, and he got most of the Northern's B games. He never got towards his end. I think he was appointed, but then he got sick to become the head coach of Northern Transvaal. And he knew a lot of us as young, bubbling under players that had to wait our chance. And we played sevens for him, and we played in, I think I played in almost more than 100 Northern Transvaal B games, and only losing three of them. Was such a talented pool of players in Pretoria. You had Tuckies, you had Defence Force, you had the Police Force, you had Teachers Training College. So all the best players were in Pretoria, and that Carlton League was one of those leagues that there were so many Springboks playing in those leagues at that time. You had Gavin Johnson played for Harlequins. You won the river. There was guys that nobody really knew because I haven't played a lot of games. Then he pulled us over with Uli Schmidt. Then he pulled us over to Transvaal, the whole Transvaal Lions as we know it now. And we then went on quite a undefeated run, which helped us. Everybody picks Springboks out of winning teams, I think, you know. But Kitsch was one of the strategic coaches. He was my mentor, apart from my dad that's still alive at 90, one of my biggest mentors. Kitsch was a mentor for me. He said to me he wanted me to play loosehead prop. I said, no, I'll play anywhere for you, but I'm not going to play prop. I played one or two games for Northern Transvaal on the prop when guys got injured because we didn't have reserves at that stage. But I wasn't going to go play prop. I wanted to play loose forward. So that was Kitsch was a thinker of the game, a student of the game.
Who was your toughest opponent?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of them. Dean Richards at eight for England, ex-policeman, Zinzan Brooke. But I mean, I think my toughest opponents were in South Africa. If you talk of Val Bartman, Tiaan Strauss, unfortunate not to go into the World Cup 95, then played for Australia. We played each other in a double round Currie Cup, six teams. Home and away. Those were the days when you knew you had to shine in Ellis Park and the Newlands. A guy like Tiaan Strauss was waiting for you there. I think in South Africa, I was just fortunate to be picked because I had a good 94 tour. He liked me as a wet weather player. And then obviously the captaincy between Francois and Tiaan Strauss. Francois got the captaincy, and then I think I got a bit lucky there. But in South Africa, I think the biggest opponents were in South Africa, not really outside.
Rudolf, at the beginning of this channel, I had Adrian Richter on the show, and he told me that, and this is a quote, guys like Cobus Visser and Rudolf Strauli were very naughty. Why would he say something like that?
I think in a good way, I think we had time, we toured. It wasn't as professional as nowadays. We toured, we had our one or two beers, and we played some pranks on each other. So, I think it made me talk about the day I had the snook. I had once got a snook in Cape Town, which I smuggled into the hotel for a whole week, which we used to put in the beds of the guys that were sneaking out. So every time somebody sneaked out, we put a snook in his bed. We used to play pranks on each other, but that sometimes at a costly to ourselves or to towards the team. They had to sometimes help us fit the bill. We got charged for all that naughty tricks we played.
No, that's great. Rudolf, I usually finish off my conversations by asking the former players that I have on the show, what are they up to these days? But I think we all know that you are now the CEO at the Lions. So I'm going to phrase it a little bit differently and ask you this. How special is it for you to be the CEO at a rugby union that you actually used to play for?
Yeah, well, it's unbelievable, special to be at Ellis Park, iconic stadium. I think it's the house of the Springboks. I was just, again, fortunate again just to look after the place until someone else comes. But I mean, this 16th of August, we're playing against Australia, and we are going to hold the record for the most tests played at a stadium. It's 55, will be on the 16th. So Ellis Park has really been good for SA Rugby and Springbok Rugby and good to me. I've been here since 2013. Very privileged, and I just think, after 30 years of professional rugby, I'm just so grateful for the players that I played with. Obviously, the coaches that coached me and coaches that I coached with and against. I was fortunate to coach against Eddie Jones at Ellis Park. We just won in the last minutes with Van der Geer. And then being an administrator, I don't think there's a lot of my ex-coaches left over, and they've all passed away. I think there's one or two left. But some of the administrators I started with way back when I was at the Sharks, I'm very pleased to have had mentors like Brian van Sail, Rob Wagner, Leon Overholser, and those guys that taught me tricks of the trade. And like I said, I was just very fortunate to be born in the right era. Four World Cups later, Junior World Cup winners at the moment. So, South African rugby is strong, so we can't complain about that.
We certainly can't. And you referenced that Van der Greef try against the Wallabies. What a special moment that was in Springbok history. And I know my viewers are going to tell me that we've got to have you back on Front Row Rugby to talk about your time as the Springbok coach. So let me say, Rudolf, firstly, thank you very much for being available today. It was lovely having you on, and I hope that you'll come and visit us again.
What a privilege. Thank you very much for having me, Peter.